Blog Talk Radio.
Friday night, and that familiar music means it's time for the political consciousness of Slick Pavlovic. Well, we have a great show in store for you tonight. We have a British citizen visiting us, Miss Marion Brazier from Bristol, England. She's also a member of a contributor to the British BBC. So we're very glad to have her tonight. Marion, how are you tonight?
Hello, James. So glad to speak to you and call in. I'm very well tonight.
Well,
and I've really got a lot of things on the agenda. Do you want me to talk on about mine?
Well, let's have a quick introduction and tell everyone, give them a little bit about your background and a little bit about yourself and, about your show on the BBC.
Oh, my breakfast show. My breakfast show is in Bristol, and it's on Saturday mornings where we talk about, who's awake between 8 and 10 on a Saturday morning, I have to ask myself. But other than that, we give over little views, and I'm over here in San Diego visiting with a friend of mine. Just on a vacation, but the world is very politically topsy-turvy at the moment, and what with Brexit and with Trump and things and everything going on, it's also very exciting. So I'm interested to speak on your political show, so I'll keep it that way right now, even though I'm out partying.
there's a couple things that I kind of like get clarified, to our American audience. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about Miss May and the position that she has?
Theresa May.
She's
quaking in her boots at the moment.
It seems to be similar to Hillary Clinton, is it?
No. Very, very different. I think when we met up earlier in the week and you kind of brushed this past me, and you thought, what do the British think about Trump? I would say this, that when I was in San Diego a couple of years back, and he was just, and I saw him running for the president, and I said, my friend, is this a joke? But it turned out to be a very bad joke. And as far as the British is concerned, he's a bit of a buffoon. I'm not sure we really want him, but, we're not great Trumpites. Is that okay to say that?
Fine.
It's trumpety, trumpety, trout face Trump. Sorry to be so rude.
No, we've heard much, much worse. But we do know that the Queen has canceled the visit. So does that seem,
has to be protocol. And if you've got these rich American politicians who are calling their cash, they're putting their cash in terms of class, I don't think that's quite where it's at. And, you've got all these people that are visiting awful things on the disadvantaged of the country, like I say, the lower wage earners. There's some very bright, intelligent forces in that element of society. But you've got these people with the money, it's so greedy, keeping it down and punishing. And I don't like that. And what we find, we have dealt with this kind of class consciousness in Britain. But when it comes to class, Donald Trump isn't really, despite his money, he doesn't quite cut it. Do you know what I mean? And we don't really want him at the Queen's table just yet. Do you understand? He doesn't quite cut the mustard in terms of British things. We Brits, we need something to laugh about at the moment, given Brexit and everything, because those poor cretins just didn't know what they were doing. However, because I voted to remain, just to make everybody clear, we don't really welcome people like Trump to the top table at the moment. Theresa May might be saying, and everybody, those who voted Brexit might think, oh, the American, you know, the deal, the trade agreement we might make with the States. No. Not going to happen, you know. No. Special relationships, I think the only special relationships going on between the USA and the UK are those that our families and friends have forged. I don't think it's going to be political. James, are you still with me?
Yeah, what does Brexit actually mean, and you know, the possibility of leaving the EU? I don't think over here in America we quite understand what that
means. It's a huge question you're asking. You have to put it into what if I voted Remain. The reason I voted Remain is I like to see myself as European, and it's a matter of going out. It's a matter of a cultural difference as well. Our children will and travel. Brexit means going back to an island mentality, and a lot. Whilst the wealthy who can travel out and this, that, and the other won't suffer from that, some children will be kept very down because of their socioeconomic position. They will not be afforded opportunities. I believe we may not all be born equal, but we all deserve an equal chance. And, you know, I think that Brexit is going to bring a lot of hardship to the working, lower middle working classes in England, and even the non-working classes, you know what I mean? Those that are on benefits. But the worst thing that can happen is I'm happening now, and I want to say this. One thing, our NHS at home is under great threat. They want to get rid of it because insurance companies are paying for the profits. That's happened in this country, and it's a terrible thing that's happening in this country, that bill that's going through, seriously, very bad. You cannot, you know, penalise people like that. Getting rid of Obamacare in any way, shape or form is bad news. Unhumane, it's uncivilised, it's uncultured, and it's certainly not worthy of the Queen's table.
Now, we've seen, you know, in Europe, we've seen, you know, socialized medicine for purposes, you know, I mean, that's what we call it over here, socialized medicine. But does it seem that
Don't you think that's a strange expression? Socialized medicine. I mean, people need medicine, socialized medicine. What a strange phrase. You see, all is in the word and in the language. I think you need to change a lot of your language over here in the States. You do. Socialized medicine. You need a national health service.
Well, okay.
You do. A health service. What do we know as civilized human beings? If we're anything on the planet at all, you've got to think globally to an extent. We've got the web and all the rest of it. You know, we've got globalization's happened already. And so we have to put reins on that bolting horse. You have to think people deserve transport within their community. They deserve education within their community in order that everybody behaves in a civilized fashion. Otherwise, we're always going to have to put up with barbarians. But some of these barbarians are at the top of the chain, unfortunately. And you need health. Everyone needs a good chance of health, good food, good water. And if they fall into a bit of disarray because of a few drugs or something they've done to themselves, then they should be picked up and helped. You know, if they're generally a good guy, why not? You know, social conscience. I mean, that's where I'm getting a bit out of it now, James, because I'm at a lovely party. But the thing is, prefrontal cortex, thinking, consciousness, leading us forward. You've got to have a better mind towards things. You've got to get this greed, this primal greed that Trump, and his nepotism and his narcissism. But then I say he's He's a bit of a buffoon, so keep him there. I don't think you should shoot him too soon, if anybody. I didn't suggest that. No, I didn't. I have not even been near Glastonbury. And be careful, because you might get, at least everyone can laugh at him at the top, and maybe the American people will come to their senses. But if you get rid of him, there might become, because you can't change your government, your Congress, and your whatever for the moment. I should keep him there, really, while he's a laughable state, rather than put somebody who might be very, very oppressive that you can't laugh at. Do you know what I mean?
I do have two members of the panel.
Replacing him under the current regime might not be the best thing to do. Let the current regime run itself out, is what I'm saying.
Well,
let people see how bad these decisions are, like Brexit. They're bad decisions.
Well,
I'm not a politician. I don't want to be able to do the administration. Oh, the dogs are barking. Is it time for me to go?
Before I let you go, I do have two people on the line. Nas. I'm not sure. Nas, do you have any questions?
You didn't tell me about this thing.
Brazen?
You never warned me.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for calling into the show. Good to talk to somebody from the other side.
I'd like to talk to somebody if they've called in. Oh, shall I go?
Yeah. No. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I got a question for you. It's good to talk to somebody from the other side, but my question would be this. Is the pace of politics in Europe kind of sped up right now? Because we saw Theresa May thinking she had a mandate or that she was going to consolidate power, call for the snap election. It goes the other way, and now things look drastically different. And,
yes,
you know, Corbyn, who everybody said wasn't serious, now we have to say, and he's talking about foreign intervention being a partial cause to terrorism.
You're absolutely right, because what's happened now, Jeremy Corbyn has come through absolutely flying colors. He's a man of integrity. He doesn't represent greed or corporate. He's for the people. And Theresa May made a mistake calling that election. She overestimated. And the people of England want change. But we want change in the right way.
Indeed.
And Theresa May and the Conservatives. No, that's right. And Jeremy Corbyn, yes, he's come up. There will be greater change. We've got to, now is the time. It's a very exciting time in politics on both sides of the Atlantic. And we're equally aware on both sides of the Atlantic, interestingly enough, of what's going on either side.
Yeah.
And that's down to technology and communication. And the thing is that, yes, I think follow the space. I think Jeremy Corbyn is a very good man, but he's an honest man and he's a sincere man of conscience and of integrity, and that's what people want of their politicians. We're fed up of these greedy, greedy gravy trainers. Do you know what Trump means? Fart. It means a fucking good... Oh, sorry. Fart. Sorry, darling. But
we'll
I
get
have
over
to
it.
The Queen's table. Goodbye. James, thank you for having me. Oh, wait a moment. Karen's shaking a finger at me. What am I doing?
Hold on, Marion, before you leave. I have one more gentleman. Josh, did you want to ask Marion anything?
I didn't have any particular questions for her that I could throw her away. I mean, I could always ask, what's the political climate like, you know, in the UK currently? But we just saw the response from the general election, so I think we have an idea of how the people are thinking over there. But I did want to actually comment on something that she stated. And Ms. Marion, thank you so much for this. I can't wait to actually use this phrase now when having conversations with individuals. When she touched on the verbiage that we use, we might need to go back to the Queen's English. I like the nationalized health service. I like the ring of that. It gets
really
away that boogeyman.
You need to change your nomenclature, babies. You need a national health service. Big time.
I like it.
Well,
you would
call it innocence, the way our words are used to make a bad thing seem good and a good thing seem bad. So, I mean, that's pretty much
There's
the game.
There's nothing bad about the National Health Service except the people who run it.
No. I'm talking about how it's set up in America. In America, the policy that's going to pollute will be called the New Air Act, Clean Air Act, or something like that. So that's kind of how it works here.
Don't there are too many intelligent people in America to really put up with the way you're being governed at the moment. It's about time you all woke up and said, enough. Enough.
Well, there's a whole lot of ignorance
right,
on the other
boys.
Side of that.
Depend on you. Do it right.
I agree
100%.
You'll
do it. Depend
on
you. Yeah.
I agree 100%,
right.
You know, but it also... It goes to show, though, that, the words we choose mean so much. And I know I've spoken about this before with you, James, but where when having conversations on, guns and gun safety, if the moment a person hears gun control, there suddenly becomes this frantic scurry, don't take my guns, don't take my guns. I value them more than my children, don't take my guns. But the moment you say, let's look at some gun safety, then, yes. I want safety.
Jesus Christ, you've got to take those guns away. They're so stupid. I mean, really, take them away. The only thing is, there's a gun in the house. You want to shoot somebody. There's no guns in the White House at the moment, I'll bet you.
Hold on. Before I let you go,
take all the guns out of the White House. Or maybe a wicket and Mickey Finn. Getting your show a bad name.
What I wanted to ask you about, though, we've talked about all of the gadgets and surveillance, and everything, but it seems like, London has become an example of low-tech terrorism. We have people with trucks.
London has become an example of what?
Has London done to make the citizens more safe from low-tech attacks?
Oh, we've had attacks on our NHS service. We don't know. We think they came from North Korea. Who can tell? It's probably three boys in a bed sitting in Bedminster. But the thing is, these things do happen with computers, and we have, getting over it. It's just a challenge. It's technology, and we did get around it and get over it and everything else. It's one of the flip sides of the coin of technology. You're always going to get bright sparks, or even not so bright sparks, blowing up the works, aren't you? Sometimes people. As we all know, the works are glued up by not so bright sparks. You know what I mean?
All right,
I don't know much about technology, being English.
Right, man,
I've got my iPad, though. I've got an iPad.
Yeah,
I know.
All right, well,
James,
hey,
can I go? I just want to go and have fun, James.
Yes.
I'm on holiday.
Yes. Yes. You can go now, man. Thank you.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you so
Say
much.
Goodnight. And I'll see you later.
Have a good one.
Thank you, man.
We've had a lot of fun, but it is kind of serious, even over there across the pond. Since she was visiting here with a friend of mine, I thought it would be good to get someone that actually has a show on the BBC and kind of has their finger on the pulse of what's going on over there. But thank you very much, gentlemen. Let's start off. Naj, you want to tell any introductory subjects you want to get off before we start getting into the meat of this discussion tonight?
I do, but I'll just push those to the side and just comment just real quickly on what she said about just language and everything else. Also what Josh said, language is important, and typically now, in this Orwellian way, they kind of define things, whatever the bill is going to do, it'll say the opposite of that. So if you're attacking an industry that you think is, dangerous, then you present it in a polite way. Or if it's something that's going to benefit, present in a way that is kind of, should be suspect. And to her point about England, not be educated and understand things. Well, in England, the left there hasn't pushed hard enough to actually bring wages up and bring jobs back. So before you know it,
you
were trying to vote for Brexit. So
you went out on this, Dan.
Oh, in England, they end up to where they think our problems are caused by foreigners, so they will vote for something like Brexit, just to hurt them even more because they haven't rallied enough and used labor and real organization and real political education to get people where they need to be. We're in the same pickle. We just have a bigger population.
Well, you know, I think our situation is a little bit different because a lot of the immigrants that they had were, you know, skilled workers coming in from Eastern Europe, and a lot of them were in precise trades, which brought down, you know, unions and things like that were much more strict. I guess is the word I want to use in England and Ireland and the British Isles. And these people were taking their jobs where the jobs that we generally have over here are jobs, you know, are kind of castaway jobs. And people can talk, you know, all of the you know, the garbage that they want to. But I don't see truckloads of white people running out here to California to pick these tomatoes and cherries, you know. So, you know, I'm not saying, you know, that we all talk about being politically correct and whatnot. But, you know, when you talk about agriculture, there's not a whole, you know, I mean, it's almost like coal mining. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of jobs that are necessarily mechanized. Josh, you have any things you want to start out with tonight?
I don't have anything, you know, outright that I'm looking to talk about. I mean, I'm very much go with the flow. Let's get on whatever we're talking about. You know, I guess I kind of want to double down a little bit on what Nash was saying there, where, you know, phrasing plays a big role. You know, for a long time we used to call it political correctness, and then there became eye rolling, and you know, people who became discouraged by identity politics. It's very important that we communicate in an effective manner. And I know that I've been very antagonistic in some cases with the way I presented the points of view, but words matter greatly. I mean, You might find someone who out there who's going to say, "Oh, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." But that'll be the first person to fight you over something cross being said at the bar. So, I'm going to try something new today. I'm going to try and be a little more trusting of the other side and trust that they're looking out for our best interests, which is really hard to do with the new Senate health plan. But I'm going to try. It's going to be a test for myself. So. We'll see how this goes.
All right. Well, let's start off with something, you know, that I kind of wish Vic was on here tonight, but you might be a little qualified, you know, to think about this on another level, because I strictly think of this from a street level, and I'm talking about Mr. Comey. Did the suggestion of tapes serve more as an ineffective intimidation factor, or do you believe that it really was an intimidation factor? Josh, you want to start with that?
Sure. And this was actually kind of a – this is a tough bird, this particular situation, because the – Now, it's going to be one of those situations where, you know, as Paul Ryan so eloquently tried to put it last week or the week before, you know, Trump is new to this, so that's why he's breaking the law. This is a situation where I can actually see that being what's going on. You know, Trump is, you know, unwittingly obstructing justice. You know, in my mind, I can definitely see him believing that he's being recorded and that there's going to be additional tapes. And so it's kind of his way of, you know, oh, look, they're taping me because there was that big blow about Trump Tower being tapped. You know, but at the same time, it doesn't matter in the end, because ultimately what matters is the action. And if that can be decided upon by a grand jury or a judge or however they're going to figure this all out, that was meant to intimidate and coerce and, you know, influence Comey's statements, then it fits the definition of obstruction.
Naj, your thoughts on this?
This is Trumpism 101, flailing away, not really understanding the whole landscape, immediately emotionally reacting to something and doing it in a way that will hurt him in the long run. So that was typical Trump, and as Josh said, yeah, I mean, that's the definition. You're basically trying to intimidate somebody using your huge, powerful voice online in a way to not only attack the person, but also get the person to maybe play ball in a way that they wouldn't normally. And the other side of it is, as Trump usually goes, he still doesn't have the range because he didn't know that it was an empty threat. Like, it wasn't a well-thought-out plan. If you're going to bully somebody, at least have the hammer with you. He didn't have the hammer, so he just gave evidence on himself and actually probably gave Comey more energy when he saw that. You know, made him more, dedicated to this.
Everybody seems to have a lawyer now. Jeff Sessions has a lawyer, and I mean, you know, he's supposed to be the top lawmaker of the land, right? The attorney general. He has a lawyer. Donald Trump has four lawyers. Jared has a couple lawyers. I mean, now, is it, you know, is this a matter of where there's smoke, there's fire, or is this a matter of self-preservation?
We got some weird feedback going. But, yeah, this is self-preservation, and honestly, I don't really condemn anybody for getting a lawyer. You're in uncharted territory. You're with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, constantly violating the law and putting everybody else in precarious positions. So you not only better protect yourself, but when they sit you down for those hearings, you better not recall things. You better cross your T's and dot your I's, because people are going to go to jail, and the question is who it's going to be. So you try to make sure it's not you.
Josh, do you believe people are going to jail, or do you believe, you know, in the end, this is going to be something that's going to be possibly compromised?
I agree with Naj here. I think that this is, you know, number one, I'm never going to fault somebody for getting a lawyer in a legal situation, especially one that might require them to do time. That's, you know, that's just self-preservation. That's getting somebody who knows the landscape, exactly like you said. I do think this might be a little bit of column A, column B. I think this might be some both, you know, smoke, there's fire, but at the same time, I also think it's just there's some self-preservation going on. There's some very substantial charges being thrown about out there. So, I mean, even with a lot of these politicians themselves being attorneys, you know, attorneys have different specializations. You know, Vic, for example, Vic wants to, you know, was looking to get into sport, being a sports agent. He's going to have a completely different set of, you know, expertise than someone who's in, say, tax code. So I can definitely understand, you know, lawyering up just to lawyer up. Same reason as where companies will settle, not because they've done anything wrong, but just so they no longer have to deal with, you know, the circus show. But if you've noticed, though, it kind of the way they've lawyered up and who they've been lawyering up with. I don't think there's a single D.C. attorney right now that isn't booked. In fact, they're looking outside of D.C. for attorneys at this point. So I'm more interested in seeing who they're asking to represent them and who's turned them down. That I'm most interested in.
You know, now, do you find it kind of strange that, you know, people that we saw, you know, side by side with Mr. Trump during his campaign has suddenly disappeared. And I've mentioned these two names before because I was actually afraid that one was going to be nominated for Attorney General. But, you know, I'm not really sure that we did any better with Mr. Sessions. And I'm talking about Mr. Giuliani. Even though we seem to have adopted his rhetoric, and the stop and frisk seems to have been sort of inadvertently been enforced, do you still see either one of them making a mark on Trump's thinking? Josh?
You know, I think at the with the current state of the administration, there's, you know, from all little inside reports, whether they're true or not, it seems that things are in disarray, and where, you know, there's almost like a council of five with Bannon and Mattis and Tillerson, and who kind of helped direct Trump and shape policy, where everyone's kind of on an island now. And that's, I think that has more to do with the results of the investigations than anything else. I don't think Trump really has much going on for him right now in terms of decision making. I think at this point they're kind of just floating by on what the Republican Congress is trying to push through, and not even by choice on their own, but that's just because Congress has the ability to push this through and kind of run past Trump at this point.
Nas, do you think that we've given Ivanka, you know, in light of everything else that happened, do you think that she's possibly been riding under the radar here, and that we're possibly giving her a pass? I mean, what is her position in the White House?
Yeah, that's the ugliness of nepotism and kind of circumventing the emoluments clause, because you got people just basically benefiting off being connected to the president. This is something we've never seen. And yes, there should be more people addressing her and some of these other people. But I mean, her branding is going to suffer, you know, when this is all done. But people like Keith Norica are the real ones that should be looked into. He's over the Office of Commerce. He used to actually work for the lawyers who looked for ways and loopholes to get around that department. Now he's running that department, so he gets access to what they were aware of, how they would come after them, and he can give that back to his partners when he goes back to the private industry. Like, those are the people who are the real dangerous ones. The ones like Ivanka, like, these are just raggedy grifters. You know, they'll get their they'll get theirs in the long run, as far as, you know, some of the wealth that they derive is going to be kind of called to question. But the deeper and more important offices, those are the ones to really kind of pinpoint on.
Josh, you agree?
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, the Ivanka's position is just that. It's a position of nepotism. I don't see her making any type of impactful influences over legislation or anything of that nature. I get the feeling that the administration, you know, all the advisors and all that, it's kind of like when you walk into an old nasty trailer and you flip the light switch on, you see all the roaches scatter. That's kind of what it feels like that's going on right now. I don't think that Trump and his family, I definitely think that the sword of justice, while justice is blind and her aim is not always true, I'm actually, for a long time, for the first time in a while, pretty confident that we might see justice served here. There's way too many loose pieces. There's way too many people that can be turned against one another. So I'm hoping that we just kind of, you know, separate them out and take them down. And it looks very much like the DOJ is approaching this almost like in a very similar to the way the mafia families were dismantled in New York. You know, starting at the bottom, turning little guys against each other, and then only flipping them when they can get someone up to the next level. We'll see if it continues, but I don't think that she has much influence, if any. It's just another example of Trump using his position and his connections and all that. In fact, just like Nash said, that the gentleman, I can't remember which committee he became a part of the department, but he was a known lawyer that fought against him. So, now he's going in there, finding out exactly what's going on, and that gives him some information to go back to industry with to manipulate industry. So, it's a cluster. It's a cluster. I'm going to continue to try and be positive that it's going to slowly be swept up.
Well, let's talk about Jared then. Do you find it surprisingly that he still can maintain a security clearance and have access to everything that's going on in the White House while he's under investigation, quote unquote?
I don't understand how he still has clearance, to be honest. I don't understand how he got clearance to begin with. I would love to find out if he lied on his forms, similar to Flynn effect, if I'm not mistaken. I think he might have left out some of his outstanding business debts on some of these forms. A lot of reports are saying that Flynn has flipped, and they're saying that he's flipped on two specific individuals. One of those individuals is Paul Manafort, former campaign manager for Trump. The other is Jared Kushner. So we will see in due time if that's the case, but there's been a lot of subpoenas and a lot of court requests for, following that money trail to Jared. So I don't know how he still has clearance. I don't know how he was able to gain clearance. At first, Kushner's role, from what everyone thought it was how can it was his responsibility to figure out how the Trump family can make money off the presidency, and it seems like his role has increased from there. But hopefully, all of their roles will cease to be eventually, and I just wish that we get it all done before the midterm elections.
Naz, your thoughts on the security clearance of one Mr. Jared Kushner?
this is one of the huge mistakes that they made. Not only does he not have the range, but also the damage that he does will stick to them. Because think of it like this. The same way that Megyn Kelly wasn't qualified to interview Vladimir Putin because he has, counterintelligence and, just political savvy and years and years and years of understanding how to avoid questions, how to get things to go to your mark. Well, when you sit Kushner in a foreign relations committee meeting with these other people who are well-versed on not only law, but how to manipulate the other side and, trade deals of the past and precedent, you're losing every time. You're sending the wrong guy to the poker table. So, the damage that he does to this administration is going to be the biggest thing for them. And think about this as far as, the emoluments. The reason we had that was because United States, America at the time, was a lesser power than the, other European powers. So they wanted to avoid being bribed and used by these other, more savvy, more dedicated political, diplomats. So you didn't want to put your young guy who didn't have the background or the resources in with these other people and allow them to use benefits to entice them. So this is exactly that, played out in real time, where you've got a guy who doesn't really know what he's doing. His background is in real estate, and he's sitting down with a Russian guy who, has KGB experience and foreign diplomat experience. And, good night, man. You're going to get beat up at the table every time. So it's laughable, but, it's not funny because of how serious it is.
I'm glad you brought up Megyn Kelly, though, because I was trying to figure out how we were going to segue into this, but you gave me the perfect segue here. Even though we see Megyn Kelly has now brought her talents to NBC, has she brought her Fox political views along with her? And how long do you think that she's going to last, you know, in this Barbara Walters type role?
I don't know, man. It seems like that show is doomed to fail. They were posting, you know, entertainment shows that were having better ratings, old ones like America's Funniest Home Videos. So, I mean, she doesn't really have the chops for this. And for them to present her as if she's some kind of political pit bull and some kind of, you know, media genius, I don't get it. Like, she was a face of Fox because of the way she looked and the fact that she was a little bit aggressive. And they assumed that that was talent, and now people are seeing it, and it's just really not that. I mean, if you go back and watch that Putin interview, man, it's funny. I mean, because there was no pushback. It was just easily him flipping to whatever he wanted to flip to, and just controlling the narrative. And that's why you don't send somebody who's not qualified to interview somebody like that. And the fact that she thought she was kind of shows you how far outside of what she is and what she thinks she is, you know, how far those things are separate.
Josh, your thoughts on Megyn Kelly?
I totally agree. This is the media equivalent of, you know, in the NFL, you have a guy who finishes his rookie contract, decides he's going to go into free agency, gets this insane contract, and then doesn't perform at all. This is Megyn Kelly in a nutshell. They thought they had fool's gold. She was a system quarterback, if you will. She worked great in the Fox system where, you know, I was like, oh, a blonde woman who's a little aggressive. Okay. Yeah, I like, you know, that works. It's not going to work for what they want her to do. You know, if they want her to be a hard-nosed, you know, go-after-them type of reporter, then that's what they need to go out and get. But that's not what Megyn Kelly is. Megyn Kelly is an entertainer. She's, you know, just like a lot of the Fox anchors and, you know, contributors, she's an entertainment. It's all about opinions. Can she do the news? Certainly. Certainly capable of doing it. But that's not what her best work is. It simply isn't. Again, the Putin interview was just mind-blowingly bad. And it's funny, actually, too. You know, when Naj was talking about we want to get people who are capable of doing the job, I've got a little bit of off-the-wall, you know, thought here. I would love to see us, and, you know, instead of having these, oh, sit down with, you know, Sean Hannity or Megyn Kelly or whoever the different, you know, anchors are. Have you noticed that they don't seem to go to comedians? The reason I bring that up here is if I'm not sure, I know most people have heard of John Oliver's show on HBO, and, you know, they tend to do segments, and, you know, they try to kind of have things a little tongue in cheek, be a little irreverent, but it's usually major social issues. Well, there was an episode about Snowden where John Oliver actually interviewed Edward Snowden, and I kid you not, that this was the best interview that I had ever seen conducted with him. John Oliver literally pulled Snowden's pants down on TV and basically spanked him, called out a lot of things, went a completely different direction from where I thought he was going to go. Snowden was obviously unprepared and frazzled, you know, called him out like, hey, if you were really just doing this for this, then why didn't you redact this information that endangered other soldiers' lives? So, you know, your story says one thing, but your actions say another. I mean, it was amazing. And, you know, for the most part, especially like in comedians in those positions, they're going to be highly intelligent individuals. Trevor Noah, the jury's out on Bill Maher. I don't think he's that bright. I think he's just loud and obnoxious. You know, Trevor's smart. John Stewart's smart. John Oliver's smart. It's going to be very hard for Putin to do that little thing he likes to do where he likes to, you know, and not just Putin, but Russian politicians in general. Look at Russian politicians when they're dealing with the media. They always make sure to send some type of little jab or kind of smirk and say something to them. Because in Russia, they can't say anything back. They'll disappear. But you know what? I would love to see Putin or, in fact, when Kilsiak, I think it was, when he made the comment about, like, he was fired? You're kidding. I would have loved to have seen him try to do that to Trevor Noah. Could you imagine Trevor Noah, like, no, it's amazing. Here, let me, like it wouldn't work. That's the ultimate counter. That's the rock to their scissors. Put someone out there that is going to just not give a damn about them or anything they're going to say, but it's just there to make them feel bad. And I guarantee you, there will not be any type of manipulation there.
Well, I definitely agree with you about comedians. I kind of like Bill Maher. I think sometimes, you know, he steps across the line, but comedians do that. And by and large, he at least provides a platform, if nothing else. But since we do have a few minutes. And you want to talk about comedians, basically this is my show, so I can talk about whatever the hell I want to talk about. Did you really think that the Kathy Griffin, do you think she went too far? I mean, now, I will go so far as to say it was possibly in bad taste because he wasn't as recognizable as he should have been. Oh, excuse me. But anyway, I would say that it was probably in bad taste, but I do not think that she should have been crucified for it the way that she was, especially when you, you know, maybe some of you haven't seen it, but in the last 8 years, there have been numerous hangings of Obama in effigy, showing Michelle Obama, you know, with a plate of ribs and stuff like this. I mean, you know, why is it so wrong when it's a portrayal of the Trumpster? But it was all right for the last 8 years under Obama. Neither one of these
people on that one. That's the typical hypocrisy of the right. So all of a sudden they become the snowflakes. They become so so insulted and so offended by the action by Griffin. And honestly, I thought Griffin went too far. I think there are certain norms that you shouldn't go past in a society. There is a level of decency that you should look at. So I thought she did go too far. But the right, who used to consider protesting and advocacy and ideas about offending people as nonsensical and childish, now they emulate the left and they do the whole hashtag thing. They do the whole pile on thing. So this was them acting that out. So all of a sudden, think of the children. Think of Barron. You know what I mean? They say. As they go after Griffin. But, you know, I just think this is what happens, though, when comedians who aren't that funny try to hit the edge and they don't hit it just right. Maher's N-word moment and Griffin's moment with that, with the whole decapitation. I think that's just comedians who aren't as funny and aren't as creative as others trying to pull off something they just can't do. So I think that's where it goes on that one.
You agree, Josh?
I do. I think that anytime an artist does anything, and anytime an artist puts together a piece, the excuse, oh, it's just art, oh, it's just a joke, oh, it's just this, it doesn't fly. It doesn't fly. It didn't fly when they're burning and hanging effigies of Obama, or drawing his wife and making comparisons of his wife to a gorilla, or even attacking his children. It was wrong then. It's wrong now. As much as I'm not as upset, obviously, seeing the case, but I understand the hypocrisy involved. And so did she go too far with it? Yeah. Like Nasha said, it's probably because she's just not that funny and needed the shock. So it is what it is on that end. But it's interesting how quickly the shoe has changed. You know, you look back at the campaign, what were all the Trumplicans and supporters all saying? You know, they're talking about, oh, we're tired of identity politics, you know, the special snowflakes, everyone needs their safe spaces. You know, if I see someone stomping on a flag, I'm gonna you know, run up and punch them in the face. I'm gonna punch people that are protesting at Trump rallies. Oh, I hope they don't do this. They better be ready for a fight. Well, you know, and it's kind of crazy because you talk to the ones that especially that are, you know, almost disturbingly pro-gun. You know, and you talk to them about it too. There's always that mention too of the, you know, oh, and I wish they would try to attack me. Oh, I got my gun. Well, guess what? Someone pulled your card and someone went to a baseball field with a gun and people got shot. So shut your fucking mouth and don't antagonize people like that going forward. And don't respond to it with this whole, oh my God, you know, now we're being attacked. Now we're being attacked. Don't get me wrong. The shooting at the baseball field in D.C. was horrible. Should have never happened. Should have never happened. But it's a direct result of the antagonistic nature. Is that excusing it? No, not at all. But it's this isn't even in the sense of telling a young lady, hey, you dressed like that and went out. You probably shouldn't have been doing that. It's not even anywhere near like that because that's just as ridiculous. This is along the lines of basically going out there, going to a drug deal, having a wire on your shirt, and saying, "Hey guys, I'm here to buy marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. Do you have any in these exact amounts?" Don't go asking for a fight, and then when it comes to you, suddenly pretend that you're just this innocent victim. You know, yeah. Now they have every right to be victimized by the shooting, but let's not politicize that. And if you want to politicize it, let's politicize it honestly and say that this is what happens when you tell someone that they're a snowflake and that they're not going to do anything and that you're so much tougher than they are. What's going to happen? They're going to knock you the fuck out. And guess what? Now you get to pick up the pieces. And unfortunately, in this situation, it's not just them. It's all of us picking up these pieces. So, don't start none, won't be none. It's long been a thing. But I live in the South. I live in South Carolina. I see and witness and hear Republicans all the time talk about this and that and their guns, and they wish someone would. Well, guess what? Someone did. And you know who took care of it? None of you motherfuckers. Instead, it was a black lesbian that I went to high school with, so fuck y'all.
Well, that's why I love having my own show. Don't have to worry about sponsors at all. We certainly be off the air today.
I'm proud of my girl though. She played basketball at Frederick High School. She was a beast. Went to Hood College on a scholarship. Had no idea she went into law enforcement. And look at she saved lives. So good on her.
Mm-hmm. There you go. You never know where it might come from. But I have to talk now about the two seats that the Republicans managed to hold on to. One, which turned out to be the most expensive race, I believe, in history thus far. And the Democrats still couldn't win that. You know, in spite of all that has happened, why does it seem that the voters still can't grasp the message of the Democratic Party? Has the Trump sensationalism completely overridden public works?
Well, I can speak for the one in Georgia. I think Josh knows the South Carolina one a little better. But the first thing would be Democrats should probably run as Democrats. Ossoff ran a campaign down here that, if you didn't know he was and just heard the ads, you would assume Republican. This was a traditional Republican base, so it was going to be a hard win no matter what. The fact that they got that the landscape is changing. He was against a very unpopular person, but he still lost in the district. She used that to her advantage. You know, in the morning of the election, she put on a sticker and said, I did something he couldn't do, which is vote in this election because I live in the district. You know, that kind of played well with them. But the biggest part of this is, like I told y'all before, 2010, Maptitude, when the Republicans changed the state houses and districts all over the country by gerrymandering and creating situations to where it would be difficult for the Democrats to get the vote out. So if you used to have, you know, a few precincts in your area, now you only have one and it's a little further away than where you used to be. Normal working day, people aren't going to come out in the same numbers that they normally would. People gerrymander because it works. So the gerrymandering of 2010 is still paying dividends for the Republican Party. It makes it much harder for the other side to organize and much harder for the other side to actually get the vote out. So, you know, that along with the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, which made some of these, you know, consultations and cross-check being available, which is really, really dangerous. If anybody out there, if you haven't heard about it, definitely look up cross-check. And you'll see that they are literally trying to drown the Dem vote in order to keep office. And that's how this one played out in Georgia. But like I said, I wish Ossoff would have ran more as a Dem on the left, because honestly, this is where things are going. Like, the real left is the side that needs to be compromised with by the Democratic Party. These appeals to the center, to people who would never vote for you anyway, are going to end up being a waste of money. And this election that they say is the, you know, biggest spending we've seen, we're going to see that happen at every turn. There's going to be more and more money spent because Dems are activated. They see what's going on. People are donating. It's just, you know, we're still having logistical problems as far as getting the vote out. And I hate the fact that I said we, because I don't really mean we, because I'm not a Democrat. I'm just, you know, opposed to everything that other side stands for at this, you know, particular moment.
Well, you know, I don't like to put a label. I mean, if I had, you know, I consider myself an independent as far as labels go.
Yeah, me as well.
And I'm registered as such. But, Josh, your thoughts on these two lost elections by Democrats?
I think that there's a whole lot to take away from these things, and it really depends on what side of the road you're standing on in terms of where that story goes. I think one of the big things that we need that needs to be addressed is that, you know, three contests, three losses. Since the election occurred, it seems that the Democrats still have not figured out how to win an election. You know, now obviously they're not unable to use the current, you know, Republican methods of gerrymandering, voter suppression, and all that, but yeah, they still haven't figured out that candidates are what win campaigns, not cash, you know, candidates. And the problem is that people don't know what the Democrats' message is. There is no clear message from the Democrats. The only message that people get from Democrats now is, you know, safe spaces. It's, you know, the snowball, the liberal, you know, stereotype. That's what people see. You know, and that's something that has to go. You know, for example, the Democratic Party can't take this posture of resistance against Trump. That's not enough. You can't just oppose somebody. You have to stand for something. And the problem is that what the Democrats have stood for in the past, a lot of suburban and rural America is, you know, they don't believe in it anymore. They don't believe they're going to get the opportunities. There's that. You know, we saw that they haven't been able to convey a message quite yet. I looked at some of the Ossoff ads. He was running as a liberal in a very conservative area. He didn't campaign towards those folks. He basically just, you know, parroted Democrat talking points, and that was super disappointing to see. You know, he didn't have to be like the Democratic Party candidate, and that's the problem. They're still thinking in terms of party, and they can't do that. They have to think in terms of people. If they ever want to start winning seats again, they have to start representing people. I bet you if Ossoff went in there with a little more, you know, a little more love for guns, and, you know, and just a better understanding of his constituents, I think he would have been successful. And I think something that we also need to look at is, even though all three of these were lost, let's look at, you know, how they were lost. You know, in Montana, we saw a guy assault a reporter and still get the win. Okay, well, you know, we could look at that and be like, that's Montana. Well, we can also look at the opponent as well. Same thing in Georgia. Okay, but then let's look at South Carolina. In South Carolina, that race was lost by less than 3.5%. In fact, I think it was even closer than that. That was the closest race, and Parnell spent only $500,000 compared to Ossoff's $30 million. And the way Parnell did it was that he didn't take the Democrat Party talking points. You know, he kept himself humble. You know, he said he was about tax code. These are a few things that he believed in that he was going to try and do for the state when he got in, and he kept it relative to the people in the area. And there was a huge drop for the Republican representative. So while Democrats weren't, you know, what did we learn from Democrats? They weren't able to win. We also learned that places that were supposed to be Republican strongholds that should have, you know, Democrats shouldn't even have candidates. It's such a landslide there. They were all very closely contested. And the one that almost won, was the one that came the closest to winning, was the one that wasn't in national headlines, wasn't being touted as a referendum against Trump. It wasn't made anything more than what it was. It was kept simple and effective. And he didn't have a whole lot of support from the Democratic Party either. But you know what? He ended up not needing it. And so I think it's important here that from these failed elections in terms of the Democrats, that they learned, hey, we got to quit trying to force a Nancy Pelosi clone down somebody's throat, because guess what? People hate her guts. She's been under the same, you know, slander attack from the right that Hillary Clinton was, and it's now her turn to finally fade out. And I guess I'll kind of finish this with this thought. The best leaders have always known when it is their time to step away and to follow. And we're seeing right now some really poor leaders.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see what position Nancy Pelosi is when we get on the air next week. But we do have a caller that managed to get in under the wire from the 314.
Well, yeah, you know, us Trump supporters always come in under the wire. That's some of the survival tactics we have had to take, especially when you live in these Democratic strongholds. It's like myself, who come from, have association with a lot of these African American Democratic strongholds. You got to know how to survive. But the blame this election and these elections on the gutting of the Civil Rights Act, I don't go that route, respectfully, because, you know, as Title V applied, and you look at some of these areas that the Department of Justice had monitoring over, some of these areas have majority black elected politicians, majority black populations. I think it was time for Title V. I think it was time for these areas to be relieved of having to be under Title V of the 1965 Civil Rights Voting Act. And I don't blame it. And you know, another point. I have seen when Democratic legislatures existed in a state, and you're talking about gerrymandering, I have seen where they would divide an 8-foot-wide alley, not a street, not a town, but an 8-foot-wide alley in order to encompass who they propose would vote Democrat. So if there's any blame, the blame would have to go on both sides, because they're trying to do what's best in order for them to win based on historical behavior patterns in voting. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
Yeah, both sides have gerrymandered historically. The one thing that's different now is Mapstitude is actually more accurate. They actually look at what people purchase, what type of lifestyle they have, and they're able to pinpoint things more directly, and that's why this has been more effective. So me saying that that was one of the factors, I'm not saying that was the only factor. And to Josh's point, how people run, you know, is a big part of this. Like I said, you listen to those Ossoff ads, you will be shocked. Most of his talking points were about cutting taxes, about finding government misspending, and things of that nature. So he was appealing to that base, but it just didn't work. So I just say that the Dems' appeal to the center will be a failing, and their only real resolution is to appeal to the real left and get those people engaged to vote for them.
Well, if I ever had a Democrat come to my door talking about cutting taxes and those things, either I will level my shotgun off on them or close the door. One of the two.
My brother. you've had some bad dealings with the Democrats. So.
Not all, but the ones that I'm very well familiar with. And here's the thing: when blacks move out of those districts, you know, they may move out into a county. After a period of time, you look up and look what's coming down the street. Them same characters trying to get the old vote for me all up again in the new areas where, you know, African-Americans have moved and whites have fled. So, and a lot of them don't fall for that stuff, which I'm happy that they don't. And like I say, I like to vote issues, and I have seen some very good Democratic candidates. I can name a lot of them that works very hard and do the right thing. And also some Republicans that work very hard and do the right thing. But when you look at the overall, especially in some of these inner cities, it's been terrible. And it speaks for itself.
All right, well, I wish we had more time, but I do have a subject that I want everybody to give their 2 cents. Sarah, from the 314, area code is that, and what political district are you from, if you don't mind?
Well, this is St. Louis area.
Okay.
We live in the 1st Congressional District, which is the Clays. His father was in 32 years. He's been in 16 years, another regime. So, yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah, well, most of us are from just. Well, you know, I'm from California. I know one of my guys is from North Carolina. So I'm just trying to get the feel of the landscape here. But, gentlemen, you know, as we know in war, there are what they call acceptable casualties in order for you to take that hill or whatever the objective is. Has this health care bill brought home the point that this administration is at war with those of less fortune in our society? You want to take that, sir?
Who are you talking to?
I want to handle that first.
Oh, is this administration at war with the less fortunate in our society? No, I don't think so. I think that this administration is trying to put things back in a perspective where those who have been successful in this society is not looked upon to carry everything else. I mean, that's just the way it is.
How do you feel about that, Josh?
I feel that it's not so much an expectation of those who have been more fortunate or have been luckier or have worked hard to get to where they've been to carry everybody. I think it's, you know, on everybody to contribute to, you know, if you're going to use public stuff, then you better be prepared to give money to the public. I think they've shown that there's more interest in philosophy than there is people, which is a damn shame. You typically see that from folks that are in ivory towers that aren't, and they're actually experiencing things with the everyday, which is kind of ironic to me, since that seemed to be the whole kind of pitched during this last presidential election was you had a populist candidate versus, you know, someone who was more politically accepted. It's just a shame. There's nothing positive about this. When it comes right down to it, anyone that would argue in favor of this bill, if you can give me any type of argument for why it would be okay to take 23 million people off of health care other than, well, I shouldn't pay for them, I really don't have – we can't have a conversation, because then it's a matter of, well, this is what I believe, and because it's not affecting me, I don't care about it, and I don't want anything to do with it. You know, and that's – you know, if people want to be that way, that's fine. But, again, you know, be prepared to contribute if you're going to be part of the public.
Well, you know, I've heard that rung out there from the beginning, and lo and behold, they're starting to change their story, their storyline, the media is. I heard them say that 23 million Americans are going to lose their insurance. Then today I heard them say 23 million Americans won't have insurance either because they don't want to buy it or whatever other circumstance. So if it's something that they want to buy, I'm sure that they would buy it. If it's not what they want to buy, all 23 million of them, if that number is correct, then they won't have insurance. But the thing is that it brought back freedoms, and you're free to do if you want to or if you don't want to. And I know there's some other circumstances that's in there, but it was a bad idea, I believe, from my perspective.
It wasn't the media saying that.
I heard it on the media today.
Let me address that when y'all get
it. Go ahead, Nas. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Nas. Yeah, that becomes the issue, though, because what you're talking about is those 23 million people not having the affordability to actually purchase insurance. So basically they're being priced out of the market. Then you have a situation where the elderly are basically looking at daunting and unrealistic payments, and also the people who have previous existing conditions. So you're pushing the healthy people out of the market, and you're leaving the sick and the unwell in the market, which means everybody's prices are going to go up. So in the end, everybody loses. It just won't be presented as a tax, but you're being taxed. So it's a lose-lose situation, and the only people who are going to benefit are the people who get the, you know, the tax deduction based on what Obamacare was, where they would have been paying a higher tax rate. Now they won't. Overall, everybody loses, though. So, I mean, this is a bad plan. That's why they didn't put it out publicly. That's why they did everything behind closed doors. They didn't want the CBO score out there. That was why. And then, remember, they got rid of the mandate. So they really don't even have a pay for this right now. Before, when it was in Congress, they at least had the pay for. The pay for was, if you lapse on 3 months on your insurance, you can get back in, but it's going to cost you more. They got rid of that now on this Senate bill, and everybody's asking, okay, so where's the pay for here? Because there is none. So basically you're going to lose GDP, you're going to cause inflation, and this is going to be a calamity on the nation as far as just financially going forward. This is a huge mistake. I don't think it's going to get done.
Well, I think it's going to get done. And as I said before, the crippling thing was this mandate, making people get involved with something that they don't want to. And I'm going to go to something that you are very familiar with, Naj. We often hear a lot of times that blacks don't support other black businesses. They don't spend money with each other. Well, should we have a mandate that happens? Come on now.
No, I understand your premise, but like I said, go to any policy wonk you want and try to do this without a pay for. And, you know, it's a disaster. You have to have a pay for these things. It's too big.
Here's the thing that I don't understand. Now, everybody can hear that number 24 million, but nobody can hear the number of the 12% that benefits from it, which is the top 10% of the wealthy in the nation. I mean, doesn't that mean something? You know, when the rich are actually surviving off the backs of those that are disabled.
Yeah.
Have you really come to that point in this nation? I mean, you know, the only reason why thank God that I serve my country and I'm a part of the VA. Now, when kids get out, they only get 5 years of service.
I mean, you know, those of us that are older, we, you know, have benefits for a lifetime. But even our benefits have went up. And, you know, we find that there are certain positions in the hospital that aren't necessarily taken care of because they're not backed by either the staff or high-paying positions, and that's where a lot of the ineffective service comes in for vets. You know, they put a lot of names on bills, like the one they put on today, which basically was to punish whistleblowers in the VA. But people don't know that because most of them don't have, you know, they're not going to read it. It doesn't concern them. And we have other things to talk about. But don't you think that that's being rather selfish to pay the rich, the ones that are already rich, and take benefits away from, you know, like the people that they were carrying out in wheelchairs yesterday?
Well, somebody asked me, did I want to get in a wheelchair for the demonstration, too? Not saying that a lot of it wasn't legitimate.
Yes.
Brother Piaggi, boy. Let me just say something real quick, though, about that point you just made. Just remember, the private industry, period, is seeing diminishing returns globally. Because of that, they're looking towards the public treasury to raid as a form of finance. So you're going to see different laws like this and different legislation like this in order to divert those funds to the private sector. That's the reality that people really don't want to hit on. That top 1% of class we're talking about is not only in the business of getting into mergers because they're not getting the profit share that they used to get, but, you know, they're seeing some huge problems, and the big fish are eating the small fish. So now this is the new revenue source. They are chasing that treasury dollar.
Well, it's good to chase, but if they perfect a program that is ideal, then you wouldn't have to mandate people to get involved. I don't like to mandate young people, newly married, wed, that is, trying to buy a home, trying to have children, trying to do all the necessary things that they need to do and have a large portion of their income at that tender young age to go towards something they probably don't want to be involved with or probably don't want to use. If it's going to be good, make it good where people will flock to it, like they want to go see the Yankees in the World Series.
Oh, so you're advocating socialism. Thank you, sir.
No, it don't necessarily have to be socialism. It's something that you want.
That's right.
You want because it's great.
Well, that would be a socialist system as opposed to what we have now, a market system.
It would be a nationalized service. Nationalized service is what Ms. Marion said earlier.
Right. But, sir, you know, you seem to be a little bit closer to my age than the other two gentlemen. And I'm sure that if you went through, let's just say, the Nixon, Reagan, and LBJ, if you went through those regimes, you will know that there were a lot of things that were forced upon us that we didn't necessarily want then. Now we see, you know, for instance, the Equal Opportunity Act, you know, so, I mean, for generations, this has happened. We shouldn't necessarily think that things are the same, but yet with all the changes in social media you know, the millennial thinking, I just think that we should be much further along as far as our evolution as men, as mankind. But I want to give everybody the final word here. We've already went a little bit over. And, sir, you're available to come back anytime. We'll be on again next Friday, so you know what time to catch us. You can catch us a little bit earlier because we actually come on at 7, we don't mind spending the time, and this is what it's all about, debate. So, sir, let me give you the final word for tonight, and let us know where you can find, where we can find you, if you have any social media, any other final words you might have for us tonight.
Well, no, I don't have a social media. I see where a lot of people, maybe overwhelmingly number one, either talk about religion or want to talk about some woe is me subject and blame things on the present administration. But I'm happy that what seemingly will be coming out of this reform in health. I can't wait for the tax reform to come down. As I said before, construct a health bill that is attractive to people and people want to get involved in. But don't force myself or any other American to get involved in something that they otherwise wouldn't want to get involved with. Thing about that is, where in the world would it ever stop?
Well, that's definitely one way to look at it, I don't necessarily know if we want it to stop, because I think when we stop making progress, brings forth another argument. But hopefully, you'll come back on next week, and we'll be able to talk some more, and have a difference of opinion, as different factions, and we might be able to convert you to socialism. Who knows?
I don't need to be converted to socialism. It'd be like me trying to convert you to become a Zionist, a Buddhist, or a Christian. People make their decisions based on what they experience, the class that they live in, a society. You're going to think differently. Everybody's not the same, and that's good. I mean, that's what makes a society so so wonderful. Everybody is not the same.
I definitely agree with you there. Thank you very much, sir, and we look forward to having you back on again next week. Josh, I know it's been a while since we heard from you, my man. Why don't you give everybody your final thoughts for the evening, and anywhere they can find you on social media also.
I think most folks have already known you can find me on Twitter at Icege, I-C-E-G-E, mostly posting gaming-related stuff, since I'm pretty heavily involved in that, or sometimes the occasional cybersecurity, since that's the field I'm in. I guess my final thoughts about it's more of a reaction today. It was interesting having an opposing viewpoint. It was also interesting how early on we established that verbiage is very important here. And if you look at how the conversations went, that very much ranks true throughout the evening. Where an individual might look at things as, well, there shouldn't be a mandate on it. Some people might call that a tax. however it's presented. And I don't think we're ever going to unfortunately have something that's ever going to be attractive to everybody, because there's always going to be players in the game here. So it's important to make sure that we're benefiting somehow, some way, because someone's going to get theirs. That's an unfortunate truth. The matter, we got to accept it. But we need to be smart and make sure that not only are we getting ours, but our neighbors are getting taken care of as well. Because guess what? If that grass grows over onto your property, you got to take care of it next. So, as long as we're all taking care of each other, everything should be all right. And again, it was awesome to have an opposing viewpoint. It was even better to kind of emphasize things we had already spoken about. It was an awesome experience.
Hey, well, thank you, man. That's what this show is all about. So we look forward to talking to you again next week. Naj, I know you don't have a social media, man, but give us your final thoughts for the evening.
The other side is not monsters. It's good to talk with the other side, see where you agree, see where you disagree, see if you can come to some consensus, and see if some things are just non-starters. But I'll just say, with how polarized the nation is right now, we're looking at a winner-take-all system that benefits none of the populace, because you end up voting and cheering for your side like a football team,
and they're basically able to play you against the other side. And a part of being a citizen is having skin in the game, and no group of a citizenry can opt out. They can try to create policies to where they don't have to pay their fair share, but in the end, they end up hurting themselves. So I think people need to think a little more deeply on that part.
All right, man. Well, hey, it was a very good conversation tonight. We'd like to thank Marion for visiting us and telling us about how things are over on the other side of the pond. We'd like to thank our listener and contributor from the 314. And as always, I thank you, Josh, and Nas. So have a great night, everyone, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.